Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dive into the top stories and discussions trending on Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Friday, March 6th, 2026, and this is episode number 327. We have got a really fascinating lineup for you today. We are looking at some new research showing a significant acceleration in global warming, a sobering reality check on the tech employment market, and a hilarious but true study from Cornell about why people who love corporate buzzwords might actually be terrible at their jobs.
We will also be talking about how Anthropic's AI is finding zero-day vulnerabilities in Firefox, and we will wrap up with a look at LibreSprite, an open-source pixel art editor that is sparking the classic debate about open-source versus source-available software.
Let us jump right into our first story. A new preprint paper on Research Square has hit the top of Hacker News with over 800 points. The paper is titled Global Warming Has Accelerated Significantly. It is by Stefan Rahmstorf and Grant Foster, and it addresses a big debate in the climate science community about whether the recent string of record hot years actually represents an acceleration of warming or just natural variability.
Right. And what these researchers did was account for the three main factors of natural climate variability. Those are El Niño, volcanic activity, and solar variation. When they filtered out the noise from those three factors, the adjusted data showed that since 2015, global temperatures have risen significantly faster than in any previous 10-year period since 1945.
The Hacker News comments on this one were really insightful. A user named iCanal pointed out that for anyone skeptical of the source, the authors are highly published climate scientists whose work is heavily cited. This is not just a random blog post, it's serious statistical analysis. But of course, the discussion quickly turned to the psychology of climate skepticism.
Exactly. A user named Jihad Jihad made a great point about how a lot of denialism relies on the reverse scientific method. People start with the conclusion that climate change is a hoax, and then they hunt for any tiny thread of evidence to support that foregone conclusion. But another commenter pushed back on the idea that predictions have been wildly alarmist. They linked to a study showing that the mid-range sea level rise projections from the IPCC way back in 1995 were actually strikingly accurate over the next 30 years.
I also loved the comment from Exhuman, who said their wife is an actuary. They joke that you know climate change is real because the actuaries are specifically monitoring and modeling for it. When the insurance companies start pricing it into their risk models, you know it's not just abstract science anymore. It's a financial reality.
That is such a Hacker News perspective. Follow the money and the risk models. Speaking of financial realities, let us move to our second story, which is hitting close to home for a lot of people in our industry. A tweet by Joseph Politano is making the rounds, pointing out that tech employment is now significantly worse than it was during the 2008 or 2020 recessions.
This thread got over 600 points and a massive amount of discussion. The consensus in the comments paints a really nuanced picture of what is actually happening on the ground. A user named MJR00 described the current tech job market as incredibly bimodal.
Bimodal is the perfect word for it. They explain that top candidates are still commanding higher salaries than ever, but your average developer is having an extremely hard time finding a position. And interestingly, they pointed out that junior developers are still getting hired because they are cheap, and they are just as capable of using AI coding tools as anyone else. The people getting squeezed the hardest are the intermediate and senior developers, who are not considered absolute top-tier performers.
Yes, and that sparked a huge debate about what kind of engineers companies are actually looking for right now. User Crystal Revenge noted that companies are hungry for builders, people who can take a project from zero to version one, get their hands dirty, and ship things quickly. They compared it to the 2008 to 2012 era, where having a strong portfolio of projects was the best signal you could give an employer.
But then you had pushback from developers who prefer maintaining and scaling large systems. A user named Layer8 argued that greenfield projects are too easy, and the real valuable lessons are learned when you have to maintain a system over years. It is a classic engineering culture clash. But it seems like right now, with budgets tight, companies are prioritizing lean teams that can wear multiple hats and just get the minimal viable product out the door.
It really is a shift. For the last decade, we saw companies hoarding talent and hiring people just to fit them into very specific, narrow boxes. Now, agility and broad problem-solving skills are back in high demand. It is a tough transition if you've spent the last 5 years specializing in one very specific part of a massive corporate stock.
Which is a perfect segue to our third story, which is an absolute gem from Cornell University. The headline is, "Workers Who Love Synergizing Paradigms Might Be Bad at Their Jobs." A cognitive psychologist named Shane Luttrell has actually developed something called the Corporate Bullshit Receptivity Scale.
I could not stop laughing reading this. Luttrell defines corporate bullshit as a specific style of communication that uses confusing, abstract buzzwords in a functionally misleading way. He actually built a corporate bullshit generator for the study to create sentences like, "We will actualize a renewed level of cradle-to-grave credentialing."
It sounds exactly like some all-hands meetings I have sat through. They asked over 1,000 office workers to rate the business savvy of these computer-generated statements alongside real quotes from Fortune 500 leaders, and the results are fascinating. The workers who were more susceptible to this corporate jargon displayed lower scores on tests for analytic thinking, cognitive reflection, and fluid intelligence. They also scored significantly worse on effective workplace decision-making.
But here's the paradox. Those same people rated their supervisors as more charismatic and visionary, and they reported higher job satisfaction. So the employees who are most inspired by this empty visionary language are actually the least equipped to make practical business decisions. Luttrell warned that this creates a negative feedback loop, where these employees elevate dysfunctional leaders, creating what he called a clogged toilet of inefficiency.
The Hacker News comments on this were gold. A user named Jay Vanderbot argued that a lot of this jargon is actually coded language used by management for plausible deniability. Like when a director says, "We need better alignment," it is code for, "We are going to merge departments and cut staff."
Right, but another user, JJK166, countered that by pointing out the study used randomly generated phrases. The people who fell for it were not deciphering some secret management code, they were just easily impressed by big words. Someone else brought up the Gervais principle from the blog Ribbon Farm, which categorizes corporate language into power talk, used by the sociopaths at the top, and baby talk, used by the clueless people in the middle.
I also loved the comment quoting The Big Short, pointing out how the bond market used terms like mezzanine instead of risky subprime layer just to bewilder outsiders and make bad investments sound prestigious. It just goes to show that whether it is finance or tech, if someone is using overly complex words to explain a simple concept, your red flag should be going up.
Absolutely. Now, let us pivot to some hard tech. Our fourth story is a fascinating blog post from Anthropic about how they partnered with Mozilla to harden the Firefox browser using their AI model Claude Opus 4.6.
This is a huge milestone for AI and cybersecurity. Anthropic gave Claude access to the Firefox codebase, specifically focusing on the JavaScript engine, which is notoriously complex and a prime target for attackers. In just 2 weeks, Claude discovered 22 novel vulnerabilities. 14 of those were classified by Mozilla as high severity. To put that in perspective, that is almost a fifth of all high-severity Firefox vulnerabilities that were remediated in the entire year of 2025.
It is staggering. And Anthropic detailed their process, which involves something they call a task verifier. Essentially, they don't just let the AI guess, they give it a trusted method to confirm whether its output actually triggered a crash or fixed a bug. It gives the AI real-time feedback so it can iterate deeply.
But there is a really important caveat that Anthropic highlighted. While Claude is incredible at finding these bugs, it is currently pretty bad at exploiting them. They asked Claude to turn the vulnerabilities into actual exploits that could read and write a local file. They ran the test hundreds of times, spent about $4,000 in API credits, and Claude only succeeded twice. And even then, it only worked in a testing environment with the browser sandbox disabled.
That is the silver lining for defenders right now. Identifying vulnerabilities is an order of magnitude cheaper and easier for AI than creating the exploit chain. In the Hacker News comments, a user named Tabot recommended that anyone maintaining an open source project should immediately use a tool like Claude Code to audit their own codebase, because you have to assume malicious actors are already doing it. Exactly. The consensus was that AI is a powerful tool for a skilled security researcher who can build a proper testing harness and adversarially analyze the findings. But if you just ask an LLM to find security bugs and blindly forward the output to a maintainer, you are just creating noise. Mozilla actually updated their security advisory to credit Anthropic for these discoveries, which is a cool recognition of how AI is becoming a legitimate part of the red teaming process.
It really is a new era for software security. Finally today, let us talk about a story that brings up one of the oldest and most passionate debates in the developer community. The post is simply a link to LibreSprite, which is an open-source pixel art editor.
For some context, LibreSprite is a fork of a very popular pixel art tool called Aisprite.
Years ago, aSprite was distributed under the GPL open source license, but in 2016, the main developer changed it to a proprietary source available license. Basically, you can still see the code and compile it yourself for free, but you cannot redistribute it or sell it. LibreSprite was forked from the very last commit of aSprite that was covered by the GPL.
The Hacker News thread immediately zeroed in on the distinction between open source and source available. A user named Zach Chen initially accused LibreSprite of ripping off aSprite, but others quickly corrected them, pointing out that forking a GPL project before a license change is completely legal and is actually the entire point of the GPL. It ensures the code remains free forever.
But it brings up the harsh reality of trying to make a living building software. User Wister pointed out that this is the same old story. Independent developers get overwhelmed with support requests and bad actors, making it impossible to make money off pure open source. aSprite is basically just two guys chugging along, and you can buy a perpetual license for a pittance.
The community overwhelmingly loves aSprite. So many commenters chimed in to say it is an absolute joy to use. It is cheap, and they happily paid for it to support the creators. Even people who prefer open source admitted that aSprite is the best tool for the job.
It also seems like LibreSprite has not seen a ton of active development recently. Someone noted the news page on their site hasn't been updated since 2023. But as another user pointed out, not everything needs to be updated forever. If it worked well in 2022, it still works well now for basic pixel art.
I think it is a great example of the ecosystem working as intended. You have a high-quality paid product where the developers can actually make a living, but because of its history, there is also a true open-source fallback available in the package repositories for people who strictly need or want GPL software. It is a win-win, even if it sparks some heated debates about terminology.
It wouldn't be Hacker News without a heated debate about software licenses. And that brings us to the end of today's episode.
Thank you so much for joining us on HN Pod. We hope you found these stories as interesting as we did, whether you are dodging corporate bullshit, auditing your code with AI, or just trying to navigate the bimodal job market.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories and discussions from the Hacker News community. Until then, keep building, keep learning, and have a great day.